put it in the chat. I don't think anyone will. Okay, it's increasing now, so yeah, numbers.
Let's give it one more minute, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so, because it's always a bit of a, it's rapidly increasing, so yeah. Yeah, we have 34 now, so. Yeah.
It's 38 now.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Great. I think it's time to start. So it's a great pleasure to have Holly Kennard here. You know her as a departmental lecturer. She teaches phonology, psycholinguistics, and historical linguistics. And I Googled her quickly to check when she submitted her DPhil, and I can't believe it's already 2013. I thought it was much more recent. It was on Breton morphosyntax. Breton is an insular Celtic language, so it comes from the British Isles originally, belongs to the Brittonic branch rather than Goidelic, which is Irish and Scots Gaelic. And Breton speakers escaped or left these islands and moved on to Brittany in France in the early Middle Ages. Holly has recently been a BA postdoc working on gender and stress assignment, especially in loanwords from French to Breton. And today she's going to talk about her work more generally. So thank you very much, Holly, for agreeing to talk to us. And we're looking forward to your talk.
Thank you. Thank you, Wolfgang, for that lovely introduction. It's great to be able to be here and talk to you. I'm going to share my screen. I hope it works. Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can you see the slide? Excellent. So today I'm going to talk to you about my research. It's research that I started during my BA postdoc and that I've been working on since then. I did the field work during my postdoc. And I've a lot of data still to analyse, but I'm getting there. So for those of you who haven't heard of Breton before, it's a Celtic language, as Wolfgang said. And unlike the other insular Celtic languages, it's spoken in Western Brittany. The most recent survey of speakers was in 2018, and there are thought to be around 207,000 speakers, which is actually more than the survey takers expected, given the previous survey. So it's a little bit healthier than we kind of thought before this survey. However, given that the population of Brittany is about 4.6 million, it's still very definitely an endangered language, and particularly because the majority of speakers are older. So in 2018, 79% of the speakers who took part in the survey were aged over 60. And this is because there's a history of language decline and now revitalization, which led to a gap in language transmission following the Second World War. So this was an end to transmission from parent to child, what Dorian calls the demographic tip. So this is the point at which several decades of language decline and negative feelings surrounding the language lead to this break in transmission. Following this, from about the kind of 1960s onwards, there have been various language revitalization efforts. So these have led to the increased visibility of Breton, so such as in Breton signage, in attempts to end the stigma that had become attached to being a Breton speaker. The establishment of Breton medium education in the 1970s has led to a new generation of Breton speakers, or I say a generation, it's a wider age range than that now. And these are often called the new speakers of Breton. So new speakers, or the néo-bretonnes, the new speakers of Breton, are those who've acquired the language by means other than intergenerational transmission. So they haven't acquired it from their parents at home in the normal way. They constitute a small number of today's speakers. So in 2018, 5% of speakers were aged under 40, which is not very many. However, of those speakers aged 15 to 24, 90% of them were new speakers, so speakers who'd acquired Breton through formal education. So Breton medium education began in 1977 with the establishment of the Diwan school system. So Diwan means germination, this idea that you're planting a seed to get new speakers of the language. And it started with a single primary school. Today, there are nearly 19,000 pupils across Brittany and the Loire-Atlantique département, which is not officially part of Brittany anymore, who are in some sort of Breton medium education, which is about 3% of pupils in Brittany. This doesn't sound very much, but it is actually, there has actually been a year-on-year increase. So I generally check the figures every year. In 2018, there were 18,337 pupils in Breton medium education. And if I look back to 2015, there were 15,696 pupils in Breton medium education. So it is increasing year on year, but it's still a very small proportion of the total number of pupils in Brittany. And it's been commented on that younger speakers sound different in some way from older or traditional speakers. So I'm interested in why this is and how this variety is different. So various claims have been made in the literature about new speakers Breton, and they generally come under two headings, purism and French influence. So new speakers are said to use a very Celticized lexis to avoid French loanwords in their Breton, and to use words that are neologisms, usually built on Welsh roots. At the same time, they're said to lack traditional phonological features such as Breton stress patterns or patterns such as liaison between words, and equally to lack key morphophonological features, including mutation. So it has been claimed that new speakers don't use mutation in their Breton. They're said to lack parts of the verbal paradigm, such as the different forms of the verb to be, and to use an analytical structure for prepositions, not use the traditional inflected prepositions that the Celtic languages have. They're also said to have a preference for subject initial word order. Now, a lot of the research I've been doing since my DPhil has looked at how far these claims are true, because more recent research is challenging these claims and building a much more nuanced picture about what new speakers Breton is like and why that might be. So today I want to talk to you about grammatical gender across these generations of speakers. So Breton has two genders, masculine and feminine, typical. We're quite used to this kind of gender system. However, there are few cues to gender. Though it's hard to tell what gender a word is just from looking at it or knowing what it means. There are some semantic links. So nouns that refer to women and girls and female animals tend to be feminine, whereas for men and boys, male animals, those sorts of things tend to be masculine. There are also some morphological markers. So there are some feminine suffixes. For example, the singulative marker N, always makes the noun feminine as well as singular, which is very interesting, but I unfortunately don't have time to go into it today. Gender is expressed through limited patterns of agreement and the mutation of nouns and adjectives. So you can see I've done this multicolored diagram. So we've got gender, so we've got agreement with the numerals 2, 3, and 4. We have mutation of the noun following the indefinite or definite article, and we have mutation of a following adjective. In Breton, most adjectives follow the noun. I've also drawn a little bubble going off to the side, which is to say that the noun itself mutates following the numeral. So we've got a kind of interaction between the gender of the noun and the mutation patterns in different ways. This is an opaque system, which relies, as you can see, heavily on mutation. So given that it's been claimed that younger speakers don't use mutation or don't use mutation correctly, what do younger speakers do? Are they maintaining the mutation, and therefore are they maintaining the traditional patterns of grammatical gender? There are also various patterns of language change that have been observed, not just among younger speakers, but older speakers with respect to grammatical gender and mutation. So I'm interested in those as well. So I've been talking about mutation as though everybody knows what it is. But if you haven't come across Celtic languages before, you may not have come across mutation either. So initial consonant mutation is found in all the Celtic languages. It's a change in the initial consonant of a word under certain morphosyntactic conditions. So although it's a phonological phenomenon, it's triggered by the morphosyntactic context. So, for example, the word for house is ti, but if I talk about his house, I would say idi. So we have voicing, but if I talk about my house, I have mazi, so we have fricative. Breton has four different types of mutation. The two I'm interested in today are lenition and spirantization, but we also have prevection and the mixed mutation. They're not relevant for gender. In lenition, voiceless stops become voiced stops become fricatives. The cluster gua is reduced, and the nasal m also becomes a fricative. Whereas in spirantization, voiceless stops become fricatives. For those of you not familiar with Breton orthography, the C apostrophe H digraph is a fricative. So it's either the glottal fricative or the velar fricative, depending on the context and the speaker. And I'm not going to worry too much about which it is in particular examples. As long as it's a fricative, it's been mutated. Spirantization is more restricted in use than lenition. As you could see in the previous slide, it affects fewer consonants, but it's also found in fewer contexts than lenition. And there's a kind of current of change whereby spirantization is being replaced by lenition in its traditional contexts. So replacement of spirantization by lenition following the numerals 3, 4, and 9, for example, is well attested. And sometimes this is attributed to language attrition. So Dresser, for example, claims that this is because older speakers aren't speaking Breton enough anymore and they're forgetting how to do the mutation properly. Hennessy, on the other hand, claims that this is normal language change. And it's attested in the Atlas Linguistique de la Basse-Bretagne, the data for which was gathered just before and just after the First World War. And it's widespread in a largely central area of Lower Brittany, and this change seems to have been in progress since at least the start of the 18th century. It seems to begin with the numerals and then spread to other spirantization contexts, and this is echoed by Ledoux, who talks about teenage speakers acquiring spirantization late, as though it's somehow difficult to acquire. So to give you an example, this is a page from the Atlas. I don't expect you to be able to see anything on this. This was just to show you kind of what it looks like. And then we can zoom in and see this area here. The responses aren't in the IPA because this is much earlier than that. But you can see that in these examples that I've ringed in red, the consonant has been lenited. This is dogs, by the way. This is ki, so they've become trigi. But in these examples, it's the traditional, this should, hopefully you can see it ringed in blue, the traditional chi or he, trihi. So even in this quite small area, we've got variation. So before I tell you about quite exactly what I did, I want to show you the patterns of gender agreement and mutation that I'm going to be talking about. So I've given you four nouns, two masculine and two feminine, and I've got them in four different contexts. So following the indefinite article, following the numeral 2, the numeral 3, and with the adjective small. So you can see, first of all, that the form of the numeral changes. So the masculine, for masculine nouns, we have dao and tri. But for feminine nouns, we have du and tir. So far, straightforward. Then we move on to mutation. And you can see that we get lenition of the noun for feminine nouns following the article, unless they begin with de, with the coronal stop. We also get lenition of all nouns following the numeral two, and we get lenition of the adjective following the noun, following a feminine noun, sorry. In contrast, we have spirantization of masculine nouns that begin with k, with the velar stop, the voiceless velar stop, following the article, but not otherwise. And then we get spirantization following the numeral three. So that goes across masculine and feminine nouns. And this is the system I'm going to be talking to you about today. So this is, Breton has an opaque gender system. The cues to gender are contradictory and they're not readily available. For example, lenition can apply to both masculine and feminine and masculine nouns. So usually it's a marker of feminine singular nouns, but it also applies to masculine plural nouns when they refer to humans. So lenition is signalling both masculine and feminine and singular and plural, which is a very confusing system. Added to this, only certain consonants undergo each type of mutation. So if the consonant doesn't mutate, if it's not a consonant that can mutate, there's no cue to gender from the mutation. So the noun for nose, for example, is fri, but foot doesn't mutate, so we just get a fri. There's no clue to gender there. It's masculine, but we can't tell that from looking at it. In addition to this, there are some nouns we would expect to mutate that don't. So this can be a systematic exception, such as feminine nouns beginning with D, following the articles, or it can be one-off. So the noun plach, which is the word for girl, is feminine, but it doesn't mutate following the article, ach plach, and it's just one of those idiosyncrasies. The mutation of adjectives is further conditioned by additional phonological factors, and I'm going to tell you about those when we get to the discussion of adjectives so that it's fresh in your minds. Opaque systems such as this are much more difficult for children to acquire, and this is particularly true in a minority language context where the input is very reduced, and this has been shown for Welsh by Thomas and Gathercole, for example. So, given the claims that younger Breton speakers do not maintain mutation patterns, how do speakers use mutation in these gender-dependent contexts? And do the younger speakers differ from older speakers? How much variation is there? So today, I'd have liked to tell you about the numeral agreement as well, but I just don't think I've got time. So I'm going to talk about mutation in these three contexts. So mutation of the noun following the article, mutation of the noun following the numeral, and mutation of the following adjective. Descriptions of standard Breton maintain that spirantization after the numeral, maintain spirantization after the numeral, which contrasts with traditional varieties, but we don't know what Breton speakers today are actually doing, and we don't know whether there are differences between older and younger speakers. So to try and answer these questions, I did fieldwork in Southwest Brittany, and I worked with three groups of Breton speakers of different ages and from different linguistic backgrounds. So I had eight older adults, all of whom grew up speaking Breton. Most of them can't read and write Breton. They were completely schooled in French, and a lot of them didn't speak any French before they went to school. I then had eight younger adults. They all speak Breton on a daily basis, but most of them didn't speak Breton at home when they were growing up. They've acquired it in some other way, so they are new speakers. And then I have teenage speakers, who I call my lycée, because they are students at the lycée, lycée student, the lycée Diwan in Carré, so the lycée, like the French lycée, so students aged 15 to 18. And this is the only school of this level for Breton. It's an immersion school. The students come from a variety of linguistic backgrounds, but few of them come from exclusively Breton speaking homes. Now, over the course of several fieldwork visits, I worked with about 60 students, but as is the nature of going into schools, every time you go, it's a different set of students. So I'll tell you as we go along how many students took part in the different exercises that I did. When I go and do my fieldwork, here's a map of Brittany. I'm usually based around here in Quimper. And so when I work with my adult speakers, I'm working in this sort of area here that I've drawn a very wobbly ring around. So as far west as that coastline, and then east going up towards central Brittany and Quéré. So to elicit my data, I used, so for the nouns and the numerals to start with, I used a elicitation task where I selected 36 nouns, 16 masculine, 20 feminine, 18 mutating and 18 that didn't mutate, which is because I was interested in the form of the numeral. And to get these, I used a set of four pictures. So for every noun, I had a single. So cat, for example, have a cat on its own, for a cat, then two cats, then three cats, and then something to give me the plural, to give me an unmutated form, cats. I should say that in Breton, and I think in other Celtic languages as well, following the numeral, you use the singular form of the noun. So we have ochas, dogas, but the plural is quiche, just in case that seems a little bit odd. To elicit the adjective data, I used a very similar elicitation task, and I used almost the whole set of nouns again. So there were 15 masculine and 20 feminine nouns, and I used a set of two pictures this time. So I showed them both at once, and I had a large example of something and a small example, so a big chair and a small chair, to get the mutation in two different adjectives. I always use pictures because partly because my older speakers don't read and write Breton for the most part, and also because given the regional variation there is in Breton, I'd much rather they used a noun that they were familiar with and was their normal noun, rather than try and mutate a noun that they're not familiar with. As a result, I do get variation in the data. So, you know, I've picked my 36 nouns, but I didn't necessarily get quite those nouns from everybody. So there's a bit of variation, but I think it makes for more natural speech. Right, let's jump in straight away and look at mutation in singular nouns following the indefinite article. So the expected pattern is that we get lenition of feminine nouns, except those that begin with D, and no mutation of masculine nouns, except those that begin with K, in which case we get sporantization. And largely for masculine nouns, this is what we find. Very few masculine nouns were mutated. So we're getting pisk or pisk, fish. There are 10 instances among the lycée students where the noun is mutated, and 7 of them are gwili, which is bed. And then we've a few others that I've given you. I think this is because they tend to use the noun bed in the expression go to bed. And the preposition to, da, causes lenition. So they hear it much more often as weely than as gwili. And I haven't really analysed the plural data yet, but I did get willy, so the mutated noun as the plural as well, which I shouldn't have got. However, it's a really small proportion of the data, 6.25 of relevant percent of relevant responses. So I think it's not terribly significant. For masculine nouns beginning with K, this is entirely as expected. I got universal sparentization across my 142 responses. So this is alive and well, this mutation. Let's look at feminine nouns, because here we get a bit more variation. So here we would, so this is only feminine nouns that we expect to mutate, so no exceptions like plach and no nouns that begin with D. So we should expect the whole of this graph to be light blue. And you can see there are some exceptions, but for the adults, well, for starters, there's not really a difference between older and younger adults. There's a small proportion of words where the mutation is not used and we would expect it to be used. A lot of these are this noun, marnik, which is a glove. The dictionary says this is feminine, and about half of my speakers said it was feminine, but about half thought it was masculine, or at least they treated it like a masculine noun, because I also got the masculine numerals with it. So this is just a bit of a funny noun. You'll see the lycée students, so 32 took part in this task, and you'll see there's a little bit of spirantization, such as this, mostly nouns that begin with K, actually. There's obviously a very strong pull towards spirantization with K So it's these K initial nouns, and then some odd ones as well. I can't show you the interspeaker variation as a graph. There's too many speakers. For the adults, there isn't much interspeaker variation. They all look pretty much like this. For the lycée students, there's a range from 33.3% Lenitian to 100% Lenitian. But for 29 speakers, that's at least 50% Lenitian. And for 17 speakers, at least 75% Lenitian. So there is a big range, but they're sort of, they're concentrated at the more Lenitian rather than less Lenitian. So for the most part, this pattern seems to be being maintained. Now, I did wonder if Lenitian following the numeral two would be easier for speakers. You don't need to know anything about the noun to use Lenitian following the numeral two. It's always there. However, that's not what I found. In fact, following the numeral two, we get much more unexpected mutation creeping in. So much more spirantization. So we're getting this pattern where we get a has dalhas instead of dalgas. And this is true of all three groups, although, as you can see, much more common among the lycée students, and they're omitting the mutation much more often as well. Interestingly, the younger adults are using Lenitian more by a small amount than the older adults. So it's almost like they're doing the rule even more than the traditional speakers. I have this category unknown. There weren't very many nouns in this category, but there were a few where I just got a really weird, mutation here. So like pal, which is spade, I get duval from one speaker. It's almost like they've done the mutation twice, but they're so few that I'm not terribly worried about these. I don't think there's a pattern to be seen. So I am going to show you some of the interspeaker variation I get amongst the lycée students for this. So this is a horrible graph, but what I'm trying to show you is that the range of mutation goes from mostly Lenitian on the left to hardly any Lenitian on the right, and quite a lot of omitted mutation. So I'll come back to why that might be in a moment. Looking now at mutation following the numeral three. So this is only nouns that can spirantize. And so we would expect that the whole of this graph would be dark blue. That's not what we find. And that shouldn't be a surprise, actually, because as I showed you earlier on, Lenitian has been replacing spirantization for at least 100 years. So the older adults, as we would expect as traditional speakers, use mostly Lenitian. The younger adults are kind of half and half, which again isn't very surprising because they're getting input in Breton both from traditional speakers and from books about Breton, the standardised form of the language, the norm, which says that you should get spirantization following three. So I'll show you the older adults by speaker. You can see there's a little bit of variation. These two speakers at the end I thought were particularly interesting because they have more spirantization than the others. They're both speakers who interact with younger speakers much more. So one of them plays Breton music and one of them is involved in Breton medium theatre. So I thought it was interesting that the people that they talk to, their interlocutors, include younger speakers, whereas I don't think that's true of any of the others. Looking at the younger adults, you'll see that there are some speakers who use a lot more Lenitian, so they're much more like older speakers. And then I have a bit of an outlier there who just omits the mutation a lot. So I thought this was interesting because one of my speakers commented on it. So CD, who's the speaker towards the left, this is what she said to me about mutation. So after we'd done the task, this was, she seemed a bit worried about how she'd done. It's not a test. I tell them it's not a test, but people still worry that they can do it wrong. And she said, I wanted to tell you something about the mutation of the area because I mix between the normal form, the ordinary form, and the form used in the Pays Bigoudin, which is not the same. And so I do a bit of both sometimes. And so the Pays Bigoudin is a region in the south of Brittany. My map isn't very clear. It's the best one I could find. But the Pays Bigoudin is the kind of dark blue bit at the very bottom that sort of goes to a point. So that's the area she's talking about. And so that's where she grew up. And she knows that she's doing a little bit of both. So she's doing both the standard and the traditional form. Looking at the lycée students, unsurprisingly, we get quite a lot of quite a mixture. There's more spirantization than lilition on the whole. But for a lot of speakers, there's just mutation, no mutation at all in most of these contexts. So when I compared the data from the lycée students, it looked like some of the speakers were doing spirantization after 3, but not lenition after 2, which seemed a bit confusing because intuitively I felt like if they could do mutation after 3, that was almost harder than mutation after 2 because it's spirantization, there's much more, so it's less widely used and there's much more variation in the input. So I was left wondering whether speakers were applying the mutation rules, and what I found was that some of them were using just a single form. So it was like they had the unmutated form and the mutated form and that was it. So for feminine nouns, this wasn't a problem. So they would get, so barque, boat, we'd get ervague, which mutates following the article, and then duvague, we get lenition following the numeral 2. But in a noun like cas, so cat, this is a masculine noun, so we get ohas, but then we get dauhas, because it's like that's the mutated form that they just repeat following the numeral 2, even though we would expect lenition here. So I think it's safe to say that these speakers have not fully acquired the mutation rules. They're sort of in on a stepping stone towards full proficiency. And a quick summary of the patterns in nouns before we talk about adjectives. So older speakers maintain lenition following the numeral 2, but they also use lenition for voiceless stops for 3. There's some variability for speakers who interact with standard Breton. Younger speakers either maintain lenition in 2x and spirantization in 3x, or they maintain lenition following 2, but then they use lenition of voiceless stops in following 3. And most use lenition at least some of the time after 3. So even if they use spirantization some of the time, most speakers are using lenition as well. And there's a lot of variation among the lycée, the lycéidi. There's a combination of lenition and spirantization. They omit the mutation a lot. And I think that's not really a surprise because they're getting different sorts of input from different speakers. So this is just summarizes what I've said. This is what the older adults are doing. Mostly lenition. We only really see spirantization of masculine singular nouns following the article. Whereas the younger adults, we have a little bit of spirantization following 3, which we don't get with the older adults. I should say also, although we're getting lenition following 3, it only affects those stops that would be affected by spirantization. So it's only the voiceless stops, even though normal lenition affects more consonants than this. It's only affecting those stops that would be affected by lenition. So I hope that's clear. So I'm going to move on and talk about mutation in adjectives. So I was really interested to see what happened with adjectives. A lot of research that's been done into mutation in Celtic has just looked at nouns. And so I was interested to look at adjectives also because they're a bit more complicated. So in a similar way to the nominal mutation, we get lenition of adjectives following feminine singular nouns, masculine plural nouns that refer to humans. So this is the same context, but there are phonological constraints. So all adjectives can light following feminine singular nouns that end in vowels or sonorants. But if the noun ends in an obstruent, only adjectives beginning b, g, gw, and m, the night. So that's the voiced stops and the cluster minus d. So you might remember that there are additional restrictions on d. There are actually some varieties of Breton where d never lenites, even where the books should say it should. So I've given you a little table here. So we have brasse and course. And you can see that brasse mutates following both feminine nouns, but not following the masculine noun, whereas course only mutates following the noun that ends in a sonorant. So I hope that that's clear. In the study that I'm going to tell you about today, I'm only using adjectives that begin with b. It's already clear that mutation can be very variable across speakers. I wanted to reduce the factors that might induce further variation. But it would be interesting to go back and look at other adjectives as well, one thing at a time. So following feminine nouns, we expect adjectives to mutate. So these adjectives begin with B. So we would expect this whole graph to be light blue, but that's obviously not what we find. So for all speakers, there's quite a few cases where they don't mutate the adjective. And you'll see, again, we get this kind of almost like a hypercorrection pattern among the younger adults. They're doing it more than the traditional speakers. What's interesting is that unlike some of the other graphs that I've shown you, there is interspeaker variation among all three groups. So these are the older adults. You can see it varies a bit between sort of half and half, lots of lenition and no mutation at all. There's less variation among the younger adults, but we're still seeing a bit. XK, for example, who's the speaker second in from the right. This was my speaker who did slightly odd things following the numeral three. So I think there's something going on with the mutation patterns there for that speaker. And then the Lycée students, I'm sorry, it's another horrible graph. You don't need to take in anything other than the fact that there's interspeaker variation. So OK, for example, uses quite a lot of lenition, rather like the adults. But then there are a lot of speakers who hardly use any at all. So I wondered what was conditioning this variation, if anything. So I looked first at whether or not the noun mutates. Now, the adjective should mutate if the noun is feminine, regardless of what form that noun takes. But I found that for the adults, they were more likely to mutate the adjective if the noun itself mutated. Yes, the noun mutates. No, it doesn't. You can see it does make a difference for both groups of adults, but not for the Lycée students. And actually, I had some speakers comment on this. It's obviously a cue as to whether they should mutate the adjective. So I was doing this interview with HX, but her husband, AA, was there. He wasn't really taking part, but he was sort of nosily watching over her shoulder. And they have this interaction where they discuss this this particular picture. So the picture was a family, but actually he chimes in with a big household before she's used the word family, and she says yes. Antigue is brasse, and then she wonders to herself, is it not vrasse? Should it not be the mutated form? And he replies, well, oh, no. And then he says, he works through it point by point. He said, you say Antigus. Yes. You don't say Antigus with a mutation. And she agrees, no, it's Antigus. He says, so it's brass. It's big without any mutation. And she says, oh, yes. Well, very well then. And she says it again. But then she tries it out with another noun. So a family. Family is feminine. It actually doesn't mutate. But she still knows that it's feminine. A famille brasse. And he agrees. Ed, if I wasn't doing this over the internet, I'd have played the excerpt because it's quite funny. But I hope you can see how they're using this information about whether the noun mutates or not. I also looked at whether the final consonant made a difference. Now, it shouldn't make a difference because these are adjectives that begin with B, so they should mutate regardless. However, it does seem to make a difference. So if the noun ends in a sonorant, speakers are more likely to mutate the adjective. I think it's probably that the rule for adjectives that begin with voiceless stops is sort of bleeding into all adjectives. There's some confusion over when to apply this rule about word final sonorants and vowels and when not. So I think that's probably what's going on here. As a final point, I looked at whether adjectives were being mutated following masculine nouns. I've only been looking at the context where we expect lenition. What about when we don't expect it? Well, largely, we don't get it. So it's not that speakers are just randomly mutating. There's not very much mutation of masculine noun of adjectives following masculine nouns, which is what we would expect. And we have to bear in mind, of course, there are some instances of nouns that speakers seem to think are feminine, even though the books say that they're masculine. So that happens as well. So let me give you a quick summary. So the results are showing lots of variation in the mutation of attributive adjectives. The mutation is largely maintained by the adults, but there's a lot of variation amongst the lycée students. And it seems to matter whether the noun mutates, because there's a link that tells you about the gender of the noun. And there's the end of the noun also seems to make a difference, even though we don't expect it to be relevant for adjectives that begin with B. It still seems to play a role. So I hope I've just got time to tell you a little bit about variation among the lycées, because there's as we saw on a few of the graphs, there's a lot of variation from one speaker to another. So I looked at their linguistic background very briefly. So I asked them whether they spoke Breton at home, if so, how much and with whom. And whether their parents or grandparents spoke Breton. And to some extent, I found students who use Breton at home with their parents are more likely to maintain the expected mutation patterns. So I have this table, which tells you about some of the students I worked with, whether they had Breton at home, how much they used it, who they used it with, how these fellow Breton speakers learned Breton and how much they use mutation. And so I could compare, for example, EP, who uses mutation almost 100% following the article and over half of the time on the adjective, with speaker QV, for example, who there's a fair bit of mutation following the article, but he never mutates the adjective. And we can compare how much they use Breton at home, who they use it with, and how their parents learned Breton. However, it's very clear that this is a kind of broad brush approach, and there's much more to it than just do your parents speak Breton to you. There are issues with self-reporting, you know, how much is sometimes, what do they mean when they tell me they speak Breton sometimes, it's hard to unpack that. And it's certainly not true of all speakers. So some seem to use mutation much more or much less than others who seem to have very similar home backgrounds based on what they've told me. I also found that having a sibling who spoke Breton seemed to make no difference at all. So this is all kind of, it's starting to get quite interesting, but I would need much more information about their linguistic background to have a more accurate assessment of the role that plays. So in conclusion, Breton has complex patterns of gender and initial consonant mutation and an opaque system of grammatical gender so that cues are not readily available to speakers. Older speakers have quite clear intuitions about gender, but younger speakers may not. And linguistic change has led to competing mutation patterns, for example, following the numeral 3. But despite this opaque system, adult new speakers are maintaining traditional patterns. So this is counter to what has been claimed about new Breton speakers. This is true of mutation of nouns following articles and numerals, Although there's some disagreement and there's a combination of lenition and spirantization following three, not a surprise given the input. The patterns of adjectival mutations show a high degree of variation in all speaker groups, so the both groups of adults and the lycée students, because it's a more complex system, I suspect. And there's a lot of variation that can be observed among the teenage speakers, which I think reflects an extended process of acquisition and a low level of input in Breton and a variety of home backgrounds. So it just leaves me to say thank you very much, with two different mutation patterns, for listening.
Thank you, Holly. That was fascinating. We have a bit of time for questions. So if you could indicate, raise your hands. Yes, Kerstin, please.
I don't know if I should be asking the first question, because in a way it's perhaps not something directly that you might speak to directly given your paper, but you had extended acquisition there as the on your last slide. And I was just wondering, given the complexity of the mutation system, and given that gender is a trigger for mutation, what do we know, if anything, about native acquisition, so first language acquisition and the acquisition of gender and the acquisition of the mutation patterns? It seems to me that they have to be linked, right? That you couldn't have and it seems to me that you'd almost have to kind of acquire it on an item by item basis, but I don't know. So do you ever find that, you know, do children overgeneralize these patterns
they definitely overgeneralize mutation patterns. Young children often use only the mutated form of the noun, whether or not there's a trigger for mutation. So they use just the mutated form when we would expect a non-mutated form. I think so. Older speakers seem to have quite clear intuitions about the gender of nouns, whereas from speaking to younger speakers, you know, they tell me that mutation, you know, gender is hard. It's hard to know the gender of a noun. And if it doesn't mutate, they don't really know what the gender should be. So I wasn't able to tell you about the form of the numeral, but that data seems to show that when the noun doesn't mutate, speakers aren't really very sure what
because you also had the example of glove, right? Where, yeah, you know, you can say, well, maybe there's a, you know, you find variation there, but at the same time, it seems an unlikely item, right?
I know, and it struck me as odd. And I talked about this research in Brittany, and before I did my kind of reveal, I asked the audience what they thought. Did they think it was a masculine or feminine noun? And they were all amazed to find that they didn't agree. Like, so I don't know what it is about glove. It's a very weird one. But there are a few others that behave like that as well, including so chwytel is a whistle, and it has a feminine looking ending. It's a feminine noun. A lot of people thought it was masculine.
Okay.
I don't know. So there's some variation goes on.
And can I just follow up with, again, a kind of somewhat off-the-piste question? Is when judging competence in Breton, so I'm asking in part, you know, there's studies about German that actually, you know, you can be quite a poor speaker, but if you've mastered the gender system, like German speakers think you're a better German speaker than you are. And I was wondering if that holds true for mutation patterns, or whether there are any kind of, there's any information on that.
So purely anecdotally, I think it depends on the mutation. So, and I think that's reflected in the data. So if you don't do mutation following the article when you should, that really stands out. Whereas mutation in other contexts following two and three, I think there's a bit more sort of leeway there. And I think that's reflected in what I'm seeing, actually.
Yes.
So I think it depends on the context.
Yeah. OK. Thank you.
OK. Charles is next.
Hey, thanks for the talk and all the interesting data. I was curious about the Rodic, and you had a lot of these cases with this velar fricative, and I'm wondering if that interacts with the mutation at all, because you have this, if the rhotic is more like the French one and it's a dorsal, is that going to lead to some kind of more gemination-like pattern like you saw in those other cases?
So again, it depends on the speaker. The older speakers don't have a rhotic there, although it's spelt with an R. It's just a vowel, so, or has. The younger speakers, it varies from speaker to speaker. So it kind of, some of them are very influenced by the spelling. So you do get an erotic. Whether that leads to gemination, I don't know. I can't think off the top of my head. But you would more usually get the glottal fricative in that context following the rhotic than you would get the velar fricative. So a traditional speaker would definitely use a glottal fricative. A younger speaker might not, because they've learned that C apostrophe H equals H, and so they just do that everywhere regardless. I don't know whether that answers your question.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thanks.
Great, and Roz.
Sorry. Nothing hugely profound to say, but gloves. So there's so many similarities in Welsh, of course, including the word for gloves. Do these rules apply to plurals at all, or is it just a singular?
It's just a singular nouns, because you don't get the same pattern of mutation with plural nouns. So only masculine plural nouns that refer to humans mutate. So
gloves come in pairs.
Yes.
I speak as one who struggles with gender in Welsh, but also struggle. I wanted to say I've lost my gloves, which happens a lot, not knowing the gender. Then I just had a couple of comments. Of course, there are huge parallels, and the young people I know are. They're in the gap, actually, and they're in your generation gap, so it's difficult to compare exactly. But what struck me was having heard over many, many years parents correcting gender in the young people, and they're all L1 speakers. So this is it language change, or is it an L2 effect, is an interesting one. And I found myself wondering towards the end of your talk whether actually that mutation is going to survive longer in Breton than it is in natural spoken Welsh. I think I'm overstating the case a bit there, but that was just a minor point that I was going to contribute. That's me. Thank so you. Really interesting stuff, though, Holly. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and RTT.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Holly. That was pretty amazing. Can I ask a question about the interaction of your gender and mutation and metricals and the stress patterns? So you had, if I remember correctly, there was a difference between the singulative and the suffix and the non-singulative and the shift in the prosody or the metrical stress versus the gender. Now, when you put this together, I was just wondering if you had any correlation between making errors in mutation versus metrical patterns. Were they more consistent with the, let's see, what the metrical patterns ought to be?
Mm-hmm.
Or were their variations sort of equal?
Yeah, so there are certain speakers, it's particularly obvious among the younger adults because there's fewer of them, so I have more data on each speaker. There are some speakers who stand out, who don't use the mutation as often as you would expect, and who also transfer French stress into Breton so that we get word final stress. So the type of Breton I'm looking at here should have penultimate stress, and that's what the older speakers do, but some of the younger speakers use final stress. So there are those speakers who sort of stand out as sounding quite second language-like. But in general, I would say that speakers are better at mutation than they are at maintaining stress patterns. So it's that's sort of more easily acquired than the stress. It is interesting because obviously if you add a singulative suffix, you've made your word longer and your stress shifts. And then that makes the noun feminine as well. So it's, yeah, they do sort of go together.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because you make it longer, you would stress would shift, then you have a gender shift, and you know, on top of it, your mutation. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask about the gloves again? So you have that word man egg, right? And so the egg is a suffix, I suppose.
No, it looks like a suffix, and there is the diminutive suffix.
Oh, that's a diminutive egg, the other one.
So it sounds like a suffix, but it's not. And it is also a singular form, but that doesn't stop speakers from adding the singulative suffix.
Okay, now that makes sense. Singular. Yeah.
Yeah. So manegan, so we get a shift in stress, and it definitely becomes feminine. And then speakers do treat it as a feminine noun, but not all speakers do that.
Okay, now that makes sense. Yeah, thank you. And I see Ros has her hand up again.
But let Victor go, because I've asked a question.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, it was a very interesting talk. I was wondering whether you found cases of transference of gender from French as revealed on the, you know, the mutation processes?
So not as much as I would expect, but I think that's because there's variation in the mutation anyway. So there are, for example, there are some lycée students who don't do the expected mutation, even in nouns like girl. So there are two words for girl, one of which mutates and one of which doesn't. But yeah, we're still not getting mutation there. So I think the semantics is not playing as much of a role as I kind of expected that it would. I've looked a little bit at loan words from French, because obviously, unlike Welsh, which is borrowing from English, Breton is borrowing from French, and French has gender. So do they maintain the gender of the noun when they borrow it? And, well, sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. And I think that's partly due to the fact that Breton has a lot more masculine nouns than feminine nouns. It's a very unequal split. So there's a tendency to make things masculine, unless they're singular, in which case they might be feminine.
I was thinking of cases of just, you know, when if they borrow the gender, not the loan word, not the whole word, just the gender. They apply, you know, the gender that you find in the French correspondence.
For nouns that don't mutate, maybe. What's more interesting is that the older speakers, they do everything as you would expect for masculine and feminine nouns, but for them, masculine and feminine are labels that belong to French. And so they will tell you that tree is masculine, despite the fact that they're using a feminine numeral and mutating it following the article.
I'm finding that in Catalan Spanish. Yeah. It's super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And if I can come in there, that it's also interesting that a few years ago I came across somebody who was doing some psycholinguistic experiments on gender in Welsh, and this idea that gender kind of means something. And then I went and did some experiments, and some of the speakers spontaneously commented to me that they thought it was really bizarre to be asked whether chairs or gloves or whatever were masculine or feminine. And incidentally, gloves shows that if people are making that feminine, then there's not a contact effect from French. But the last question I had was whether notoriously in Welsh dictionaries, I've just looked up a small one I've got, there is an abbreviation for a masculine noun, there's an abbreviation for a feminine noun, and then there's an EGB, which is both. Because a lot of nouns vary in gender according to where they are and so forth. David Willis can tell you more about that. And I just wondered, is that the case in Breton, or is there just not enough
Yes, so there are now predictionary says can be masculine or feminine. So bucket, sigh is one of them. They're usually nouns that don't mutate. I would hesitate to say they're all nouns that don't mutate. But that makes sense, right? Because then you don't get Q. But then I found some in my data that the dictionary was very clear, said they were feminine or masculine, and I found variation. So I don't quite, I think there's more variation than the dictionaries let on.
Even, interesting. Yeah, thank you.
Can I ask about the orthography? So you mentioned the older speakers are schooled in French, mm-hmm. And they're not comfortable reading or writing Breton. To what extent do they struggle reading it? I would have thought it's a fairly shallow orthography, right? Or
the older speakers struggle to read Breton. It's quite regular, but it's not the same as French. So it's like for English speakers reading Welsh, right? Yeah. Welsh is quite regular, but you have to know what the rules are in the first place. They struggle to read and write Breton, which is then a shame because there's a whole area of Breton that's not accessible to them because they're not literate.
I can see there's a question here from in the chat. If the concept of a masculine-feminine distinction is bizarre to these speakers, do they have a more native nomenclature for these genders?
Not that I know of, no. These little snippets that I get from them while we're chatting about the task or they're in the middle of the task, they don't then volunteer, oh, but I would call it this. They just say things like, oh, you know, it's really odd because trees are masculine noun, and yet in Breton we're treating it like it's a feminine noun. Isn't Breton strange? It's that kind of comment.
Okay, great. Are there any more questions? I can see chat. Let me see. Oh, that just says thank you. Toby, yes.
Hello, Holly. I just wondering about the. I think my camera isn't working, but I guess you can hear me.
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Great. So the phonetics of lenition and sort of how sort of categorically one might be leniting as opposed to just doing connected speech processes. Do you have a nightmare trying to decide whether something is in fact a voiced version of what it otherwise would be? Do you have to do a lot of sort of acoustic analysis to decide whether you have a case of lenition?
So I have done some acoustic analysis. Largely it's quite clear. It's more difficult with the kind of voice stops to fricatives, actually, in connected speech. Mm-hmm. It's largely it's clear. If I'm really not sure and I can't tell from looking in, you know, at the waveform, then I just exclude it from the data.
Right.
Largely it is clear, and I did some work where I looked at whether the mutated form of the phoneme, so the t to d, for example, whether that d was the same d as you got in a word where the unmutated form, where it was the normal unmutated d, and they do seem to be the same if you look at things like the voice onset time and the closure duration. So it is a proper phonemic change, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, great. I think we should all thank you very, very much for a very informative and clear talk, very clear model of clarity today. Thank you. Thank you.